kiss and you give one a toy and you give the next one a much better toy, at least in his mind, the second kid's going to scream, "That's not fair." And that's kind of the way people are. Children are born with that kind of selfish thing. I grew up at a disadvantage in my family situation. My parents were squabbling with each other, so after some back and forth, about two or three, but I don't remember that part of it, I was sent to be with my grandparents while they spent the next X number of years squabbling. It's complicated. And my grandparents had, they had 10 kids, but they had five or six. Every 2 years, somebody would grow up and leave home. But there, plus two grandkids, but Carolyn and I were the same age. She's my cousin. Her mother was there. Her mother was a nurse. So I was the only kid, and her dad had passed away. I was the only kid that didn't have his parents. And now at least as I perceived it, everybody got better gifts than I got. And I was angry, or whatever the term is. That's not fair. That's how I felt inwardly. And I'd get things like socks and underwear for Christmas. And I hated Christmas because of that. I realize that's a bad attitude, but I'm just telling you how I was, you know. And Carolyn got all kinds of good gifts. We'd sit around. I'm not making this up. Looking at each other's bowl of ice cream, who got the most ice cream? Who got the most popcorn? And then she would try to slow eat me so that she'd end up with more left over after I'd eaten mine. I mean, it really got petty. I mean, really petty. And I'll admit she was more charming than I was, which probably helped. And my bad attitude probably didn't help matters either. I viewed the world from the point of view of I was looking for unfairness, and I found plenty of it to get mad about. And I got brattier. And I remember when Daddy had us hold a bunch of money, every kid got to hold it, and he bought a house in a much better neighborhood, better school district. But that had problems, because like our next-door neighbor had a son about my age, Didi, and they were professional, had plenty of money, and he had all kinds of stuff. And you know how I felt? That's not fair. And then had two Jewish friends about my age across the street, and they had a lot of stuff. And you know how I felt? That's not fair. And anyway, things went that way, and Van, the youngest, was kind of a special. He was younger than I am. I have an uncle younger than I am. We're kind of like brothers, and we're the only two of the boys left now. He got pony stuff that I didn't get, and, you know, I was mad about that. And, so when you compare plastic toys, theirs are much better than mine. And so you can kind of see the attitude that I had. And my problem was I didn't really appreciate what I did have. I was always looking for what I didn't have, if you could kind of get that expression. Now, later, I learned to appreciate my grandparents, and they helped me get through college. And you got to see it from their point of view a little bit. But when you're younger, you're just too bratty to see it, if that makes any sense. So I'm not, and by the way, I'm not putting my parents down. They had a lot of problems, and my dad had a very bad life, and he had some bad breaks early in life. And so I don't want to seem like I'm, maybe that's a whole nother story. But all I'm saying is I took the point of view of worrying about fairness all the time and looking for unfairness, which really is a very carnal. It's as carnal as all daylight, that perspective. The world's not fair, and I'm not getting my fair share. And we ought to view the world as Dave Ramsey sees it. Here's Dave Ramsey's on the radio, and they ask him, "How are you?" And he says, "I'm doing better than I deserve." That really is a better Christian perspective. I'm doing better than I deserve. That's the perspective that we ought to take. Because all of us have blessings, and generally you don't focus on your blessings. If I looked at my childhood in an overview, I did have some blessings. My grandparents actually had more on the ball. You have to grow up to appreciate it, but you don't appreciate the time. Maybe they made some mistakes, but having their kids dump kids on them and all kinds of problems. You know, it kind of complicated their life. But really, I was blessed compared to a lot of kids, you know, if you view it that way. And with their help, and I was the first one in my family to get a college degree. So I really was blessed. But I didn't see it until I got to be about 18, 19, and 20. It took a while to get those bad attitudes out. And I may still have some of those bad attitudes now. People would say, yeah, you're sure you've grown up. I'm working on it. You know, maturity is one of those things. One day you get to be 60 and think, well, I finally matured. But then something else happens. You say, well, maybe when I get to 65, I'll be mature completely. But we all have God's grace. I'd argue the greatest gift, the greatest blessing is God's grace. We all have God's grace. No matter what you didn't get as a child or as a young person, or you know, life has its ups and downs, and probably everybody can complain about the ups and downs in life. We all have God's grace. And in the big picture, isn't that the most important thing? In 1,000 years from now, when we're in God's kingdom, we'll say the greatest gift is God's grace. All those plastic toys we didn't get when I was 10 and 11 and money for baseball leagues, which at the time looked like a big deal, but now in retrospect, I had to build my own first baseball glove. I have an old one, but it wasn't the end of the world. The point I'm making is all the things you didn't get when you wanted them, or you had to do with an old one, really they aren't that big a deal, are they? They're really not that big a deal. I'll add one more criticism. I think my mom later sort of saw what was going on, and so she sent me a brand new blue Swin bicycle. Then things reversed, and they were jealous of me. And Osie, who's at that point was the oldest boy at home, he took my beautiful blue Swin and wrecked it against a telephone pole. Now, he claimed, I brought it up to his attention about 10 years ago. It was just an accident. You know, he doesn't remember quite the way I remember. I think he did it intentionally. It's like, you just can't get a break when I was a kid. You finally get a good gift and somebody messes it up. Now, that's how I felt. Now, maybe that's just a bad attitude on my part, but that's how I felt. And what we see happening in the world, suicides are up. It was in the newspaper yesterday, even in Missouri, suicides are up. And I think that shows people are looking at the world's not fair. Whatever's going wrong in their life, they're obsessing on what is wrong in their life. For instance, about 5 years ago, we had the great collapse in the end of 2007, 2008, stock market collapse. There was a guy who had about $100 million. Whatever his investments were, he lost everything down to about $4 million. He committed suicide. Now, I would argue, okay, so he had $100 million. He was a big, big, big wheel. Now he's not a big wheel. But I'd love to have $4 million. Please give me $4 million. I mean, you went from super wealthy to just, you know, minor wealthy, and you're going to kill yourself? Are you kidding me? But that's a true story. Now, the point I'm getting at, he should have been happy he still had some money left. Let's go to Matthew 20, where there's a parable that's related to what I'm talking about and will help us, I think, have mature, which I'm slowly doing, and trying to get into a better attitude. But I grew up looking from the point of view of, it's not fair. Anyway, Matthew 20, we're going to read the first 7 verses. Some of the better translation, the King James, make it a little better, but it's about the same. By the way, denarius, it's made of silver and it's 10, I mean the number 10 is involved in it. I think it's more like $10 in today's currency value, because you have a hard time living on $10 a day. But the King James translated as a penny, so whatever. It obviously was living, just barely living. It wasn't high living. It's sort of like if you go to Lowe's, sometimes you'll see a bunch of men waiting for construction people to come by or landscapers and hire them for the day on a cash basis. This story is kind of that kind of thing. Matthew 20. But it has a relationship to the spiritual kingdom. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, in other words, he owns something big, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, or a denarius in the Greek, he sent them into his vineyard. Obviously, it had to be more than a penny, because nobody would move for a penny. I don't even bend over to pick up pennies. It's not worth the back strain. So I think it's more like $10 in today's world, but regardless. He sent them into his vineyard. And they went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. So, you know, he went to his version of Lowe's and said, why are you guys, you know, still standing? And they said, he said to them, go you into the vineyard, whatsoever is right, I will give you. And they went. So that was about, first one was about 6 a.m. early in the morning near sunrise. This is more like 9. Then the sixth hour, that's noon, and the ninth hour, which is 3 p.m., he went back again and found more workers, and he hired them and said he'd do what's fair for them. And then verse 6, and about the 11th hour, this is 5 p.m., maybe only one more hour to work before it starts to get dark. On the 11th hour, he went out and found others still idle and said to them, why are you standing here idle all day? They've been sitting in the parking lot all day. They said to him, because no man has hired us. He says unto them, go you into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall you receive. He actually had compassion on the guys that hadn't been picked. You know, they've been sitting all day, and nobody had come by and given them a laborer's job. So he had compassion, and he gave them a job because they hadn't been chosen. Now, if you read the next couple of verses, when it's all over, he tells his foreman to pay the men, starting with the ones that had just got there an hour ago. And so each of them gets a denarius, or the King James, a penny. So the guys who were there from 6 a.m. and working probably 12 hours, they're thinking, wait a minute, is he giving these guys who only been there one or three or five, 6 hours the $10 coin? What's he going to give us? Maybe he's going to give us 10 or 12 denarius. I won't have to work for over a week. But when their turn came along, he gave them the very same thing he gave the others. And they were mad. You can understand. They were screaming, it's not fair, in my old expression as a kid. It's not fair. And I can understand that. We were out here in the hot sun for 10 hours picking your grapes. For 12 hours, and these guys are only here 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5 hours, and they're getting the same money I'm getting. It's not fair, they scream. You can kind of see their attitude. Verse 13, but he answered one of them and said, friend, I do you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the denarius, or the $10 bill? Take what's yours, and go your way. And then he goes on to say, if I want to be generous to the other people, it's my money, I can do whatever I want. Now, the spiritual application of that is, God is going to be gracious to people who maybe have done less or borne the pressure and trials less. And it's still God's gift. He can give it to whoever he wants. I can see someone saying, I've been in the church for 30 years, and I've had to give up this and had to give up that. I've been pressured here and there. This guy comes in maybe the last year before the tribulation, and you say he may get the same reward I get. That's not fair. But I don't think we're in a position to tell God it's not fair. God can give his grace to anybody he wants, no matter what they have done or haven't done. I'm not saying that you don't have to repent, or, you know, in all those scriptures that we read, that Mr. Edwards read about how Paul disciplined himself. Obviously, we're not saying you run crazy, and take God for granted or take Jesus Christ's sacrifice for granted. Of course, you don't do that. Verse 15. Now he's describing the attitude of the men who were mad because they didn't get, you know, five times more than the ones who were there who worked less. In other words, he hasn't taken anything away from them. He's just being generous to other people in a way they don't like. He says, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my own? In other words, God can give grace to anybody he wants. His case is his own money. Your eye is evil. In other words, is your eye evil because I am good and generous and graceful and gracious? And their eye was evil. The evil eye. By the way, the term evil eye comes from Deuteronomy 15:9, where in the law God said, because of the cycle of freedom and debts, he said to Israelites to be generous to each other, regardless of, you know, how much they'd get out of it. He said, don't harden your heart and get that evil, selfish eye. And when you think of the evil, selfish eye, you think of Saul. When Saul saw that God was blessing everything David did, Saul's jealousy got so great it drove Saul insane. Jealousy's bad for you. Of course, it's his own fault, but even still, you know how human nature is. Envy and jealousy are hallmarks of carnality. And when I was a kid, I was carnal. Well, I'm still carnal, but hopefully I covered up more than I used to. But pure carnality is, it's not fair. I didn't get my fair share. He got something I didn't get. And let's face it, that's always going to be the case. There are always people luckier than you are, if you want to look at it that way, or more blessed, or had a better family, whatever the deal is. And why is the 10th commandment there, thou shalt not covet? Because God knows it doesn't make you happy to covet what other people have. They had a bigger house. They got a bigger car. They had a better family. Their family had more money. They got better toys, better baseball gloves, and all, whatever the thing is that you know we can look at. They get to ride ponies and saddles, all that stuff, and I don't get to do that. Well, and really it's not good for us to covet what other people have. We should. And by the way, even if they don't deserve it, it's not a question of them deserving it. Because you can always make the argument, I worked harder and I still have less than he does. It doesn't matter. It's not a question of someone deserving it. God's grace goes to whoever he wants to give it to. And I think life is a little bit that way. Some people are just luckier. They're in the right place at the right time and things go their way. And other people are not as lucky. You have to learn to roll with the punches. The one thing that you've heard all your life, and I told my boys, life isn't fair, and you get used to it. I got that out of my childhood. Life isn't fair. And also, the attitude God wants us to have is to take this attitude. Rejoice over other people's blessings. So if Van got something I didn't get, or Carolyn got something I didn't get, I should be happy for them. Can you see that's a better attitude? Be happy for the one who gets the break as opposed to being upset about what you didn't get. I know that's easier said than done, right? Everybody said, oh, I'm thinking about when I was whatever, and so-and-so, and I understand. I do understand that. And or so-and-so got inherited all that good hair, and what did I get, you know? But I understand those things. Baldness runs in our family. What can you say? We should be more like Dave Ramsey when people ask, how are you doing? I'm better than I deserve. And we're more blessed than we deserve. I think we should think that. We are more blessed than we deserve. We're in the first calling. We're more blessed than we deserve. We should think that way. You'll be happier. And that's what God wants us to think. If we ask God something like this, if you were to ask God, God, don't I deserve more than, and whoever you're going to point to, don't I deserve more than so-and-so? God might reply, oh, do you want me to give you what you deserve? I don't think you want God to say, No, I don't think he wants to say, God, give me what I deserve, because then you're not going to make it. No matter how good you may be. So I want to throw in a corny joke here, but it kind of makes a point. This joke is called, I Don't Want to Go. This grandmother shows this beautiful picture of a pilgrim's family, you know, with the blunderbuss on his shoulder, and they're walking across the countryside to church. And she says, as Thanksgiving Day was approaching, the family had received this, you know, great card about the pilgrims going to church. Grandmother showed the card to her small children who were going to church. She said, look, the pilgrim children go to church with their mother and father. And the bratty little boy says, oh, yeah? So why is a dad carrying a rifle? Well, that's what the blunderbuss is. And I've seen those paintings. He does have a little rifle. Well, those little brats didn't appreciate having a unified family that was worshiping together. By the way, there are a lot of kids who don't have families that are reasonably unified and that worship together. I grew up in a family that was reasonably unified. If somebody had a problem, the extended family picked it up. I remember, I won't go into detail, certain family members having trouble with some bad things, and my grandfather and some of the older uncles stepped in and solved it. We kind of took care of each other. And I'm saying that, like, now that I hear more and more weird things, like grandmothers selling drugs and families that practically kick kids out in the street or don't take care of them, and just weird stories. Mothers that throw a mountain of dirty clothes by the door and tell the kid, hey, I don't have time to fix you breakfast. Go through the mountain of clothes, pick out something to eat, and get on the school bus. And I realized, wow, I actually was blessed, and I didn't realize it. I mean, I know that's really, I was blessed family-wise, and maybe not in all the material things, because they were struggling. Anyway, but I was blessed and didn't appreciate it. And I believe a lot of people are blessed, and all of us are blessed in some way, shape, or form. We need to find those blessings and think about those blessings. Now we've gone from too warm to too cold. You just can't win.
It's not fair.
It's not fair. That's right. It's not fair. But they are going to improve the heating and cooling system in here coming in the near future. So it'll get better. I told the guy, I said, you need a vent to move that stuff around. And I think he got the message. Hopefully they'll do it. Think of Joseph. His 10 brothers were green with envy because he got spiritual visions and he got the coat of many colors. He was clearly the favorite. My guess is he's probably the best looking, that was best educated, and obviously his father's favorite. And they were green with envy of him. And it just led to a lot of trouble. Or let's take Jacob and Esau. Let's go to Romans 9. You'll see this principle throughout the Bible where God just basically says, he says it in more than one place, but we'll just look at one place here. God chooses who he wants to choose, and it sometimes has nothing to do with earning it. We'll go to Romans 9. Romans 9, verse 11. It's to Jacob and Esau. Paul is making a point to the Christians at Rome about grace. Romans 9, verse 11, and he reads, he's speaking about Jacob and Esau. For the children being not yet born, neither having done anything good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election, that is God's choosing, might stand, not of works, but of him that calls, it was said unto her, that is to the mother, the elder shall serve the younger. It is written, Jacob have I loved, and Esau have I hated. Hated is probably a poor translation. It means love less. By the way, Jacob was blessed, but he was blessed more in physical things. He had his own little tribal, and you read the story, and they had a lot of stuff. But he wasn't interested in spiritual stuff. He sold his spiritual birthright for a bowl of soup, and he was more the tough guy physical type, and God blessed him physically, but the spiritual blessings went to Jacob. And it was decided at birth, or actually before birth, who got what blessings. And a lot of God's choices, including the choice of us for the first resurrection, has nothing to do with us deserving it more than somebody else. It's purely God's choice. And you'll see that throughout the Bible. God just chooses somebody, and other people are not chosen. Now, God will take care of them in the next resurrection. I'm not saying they won't be taken care of, but some people are chosen first. You know, when the disciples would argue with Christ, you'll see it in Matthew 20 about who was the greatest. And Christ told them, whoever's going to be on my right hand, that's second in command, it's God's choice for you all not to worry about it, as they were jockeying each other for position. And we could speculate as to who it's going to be, Peter, Paul, James, or John, or Moses, but it really doesn't matter. God will make that choice. And it may not even be based so much on who deserves it the most. It's up to God. It's God's grace. And also, I think this parable in Matthew 20 is also telling the religious leaders, because it says the first shall be last and the last shall be first. It's also telling the religious leaders of Israel that sinners and Gentiles will go into the kingdom before them. People that they would consider a lot less worthy. And let's admit it. Some people in God's church have it easier. Someone says, well, I was in the church. Boy, my parents were against me and they kicked me out of the house and I had a rough road. Well, so-and-so, they didn't have all those troubles. And I've seen church members get jealous of each other. So-and-so has it much easier than I do. What can I say? Some people have it easier than you will. And don't say, it's not fair. Don't worry about fairness, because that is the carnal perspective. Carnality screams, it's not fair, and views everything from the point of view of, am I getting my fair share or not? And sometimes when you look at somebody else's blessings, you're seeing it from the outside. And you think, boy, look at what they got and I didn't get. But if you were walking in their shoes, it might not be as easy as it looks from the outside. You know, you think, oh, they're so blessed. But if you were in their shoes for a few years, think, maybe they're not so blessed as I thought they were. I believe that's often true. And I think here's what God wants us to do. Focus on our grace. Focus on our grace. Focus on our blessings. Focus on our future, because our future is bright. And isn't that what really counts? What happened between me, Carolyn, Van, and OC? It's just petty stuff that I need to forget completely and all that stuff. And actually, my life turned out to be more blessed in some respects than theirs. I'm not saying that bragging, just the way it worked out in the long run, which is kind of surprising. I think Carolyn would be shocked if she were still with us. But based on how we were when we were little kids. But don't look at it like a bratty child like I was, pouting over stupid plastic toys, or even pouting over adult toys like boats and furniture and that kind of stuff. The greatest gift is grace. So I think we should say, be thankful that we have a chance to avoid the great tribulation and God's plagues. Because I believe the majority of us would be in places of safety. I've said that before. So what if I'm chosen to be one of the few heroic martyrs? Well, if you're strong enough, that's to your credit. You might be written up somewhere as one of the great heroic martyrs. So if you're strong enough. But the world is headed for a horrible climactic crisis. When all these dictators get armed to the teeth in the Middle East and in Europe and the Far East and they go to war and... well, I'm just glad that either I'll have passed away or be in a place of safety. And when God's plagues come on this world, you know, we'll be protected from them, just like the land of Goshen was during Moses' time. That's something to be thankful for. Secondly, our chance to be in God's family. Think about that. To be in God's family. To be in God's family maybe in less than 12 years from now. Wow. You know, you'll be forever young. You don't have to worry about aches and pains. You'll be able to fly like Superman. I assume you won't be earthbound. You can fly to heaven, come back, and whatever is involved in that sort of thing. You'll be impervious to harm. Eternal. I mean, that's something. And a chance to help this world be a loving paradise. Just want to turn to Revelation 5. I know we've looked at it before, but just want to read it one more time and think about what a great opportunity this is. Revelation 5, verse 10. And it says, Revelation 5, 10 has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. Now, for 1,000 years, we will be ruling this earth, turning it from the mess that it's going to be in a few years to a virtual paradise. I mean, for the physical people, and then they'll be, you know, moved into God's family and whatever program that God sets up at that point. But, you know, Romans 8 says that our reward is so great, it cannot even be compared to the troubles we face in this life. It can't even be compared. That's what Paul says. Can't even be compared. And in Galatians 5, 9, in Galatians 5, verse 9, 5, verse 19, now the works of the flesh are manifest are these. And then he rattles through them all. Verse 21, envyings. It's the first one of verse 21. What are the works of the flesh? It's screaming, that's not fair. I envy so-and-so because he got whatever he got, and I didn't get something nearly as good. That is pure carnality. That's like a bratty kid. Verse 25 and 26. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory. In other words, I got more than you have, like Carolyn and I with ice cream and other stupid stuff. I got more than you've got, provoking one another, envying one another. The last thing we want to do is envy anybody, no matter what they get. Don't worry about what's fair and what isn't fair. And that's what God wants us to do. You know, we used to cruise cars. I remember when I finally got my little car at 17. You cruise so people would envy you. I mean, other teenagers. That's what a lot of cruising was all about. You get certain pretty girls in there with you. It was all about getting people to envy you. I'm cruising. Look at me. I'm 17. I got a blue Robin Eggs blue Ford. Look at me. I mean, you know, some of that was it, right? We need to do the opposite of that. We need to rejoice when others are blessed, to have the spiritual mind of Jesus Christ.